Jesus left the glories of heaven so that you might gain those same glories. The incarnation of Jesus, his leaving heaven and coming to earth, was leaving much so that you can gain much. And it was the ultimate example of generosity.
You're listening to Opening the Bible with Dr. Nick Gatzke, senior pastor of Old North Church in Canfield, Ohio. I'm your host, Brian Dolan. Today we get to the second part of a message titled, The Grace of Giving. And immediately, Pastor Nick, someone's going, here we go, giving, another pastor trying to get my money. Is that what you're doing?
No. The scripture teaches us very plainly that part of our Christian life is growing in generosity. And you know what, Brian, what I've experienced personally over the years and have seen hundreds of people experience is that when we move past our cynicism about money and we move past our enslavement to money, when we grow in generosity, it becomes one of the most freeing and exciting realities for Christians.
Well, with that, Pastor, let's listen to your message today. It's called The Grace of Giving, Part 2.
Now, the notion of surrendering to God, all of ourselves to God, is to say, to recognize, and to live in accordance with the conviction, God, you are the King. You're the generous King. You give us everything we have. And I surrender all of my physical realities to you and to your purposes and to your plans. There's a viewpoint in this life regarding our material possessions, a short-sighted, narrow viewpoint of life is, I earned that, and it's mine to do with whatever I want to do, to serve my purposes, to serve my comfort, to serve my desires. And this is not to say, friends, that you shouldn't work hard and pursue all of your skills and abilities and gifts that God has given you, even to earn. But there's a bigger view of reality. The one who has a larger viewpoint steps back and looks at the majestic King of the universe and says, you're the one who gives strength and power and might because you are the mighty one. You're the one who gives riches and wealth because you are the ultimate wealthy one. And anything and everything that I have comes from you. And so, when you see him more clearly, you are positioned more rightly, and surrender is the natural result. You willingly give all of you to God because of the grace that he has shown to you. And surrender is an ongoing dynamic in this life. You don't just surrender your whole person once to God, because if you're anything like me, you surrender it today, but tomorrow you're probably going to try to take it back. We surrender regularly and daily our relationships, our aspirations, and perhaps most difficultly is our money. And so there's a principle at play here. It becomes really difficult for you to give of material wealth if you've not yet given yourself to the Lord. It's a massive struggle for you to be open-handed and generous for the purposes of God if you've not given your whole self to the Lord. And in fact, it might actually be dangerous for you because you could maybe convince yourself that you're doing just fine along the way as you buy your favor from this eternal King. However, the principle functions this way. When you've already given the whole to God, it becomes much easier for you to give of the parts to him. When you've already given everything you are and everything you desire to be, all that you have, you recognize in its appropriate place in light of this majestic King, then it becomes much easier to give the material or financial parts to him, because it's his anyway. You know, when you go to a doctor for your annual checkup, he or she will often begin to poke and prod and press in various places. I was at the doctor last week for the first time in a couple of years, and he says, does this hurt? Does this hurt? Does this hurt? How about that? And if you cry out in pain, one of two things has happened. Either the doctor has pressed too hard without the right amount of sensitivity, or more likely, there's something wrong. And the doctor will say, well, we better do some more tests because it's not supposed to hurt here. So it is when we come across scriptural teaching about generosity and giving and financial responsibility. And certain ones of us might cry out in discomfort, or we criticize the message or the messenger. One of two things has happened. Either the pastor's pressed too hard without the right amount of sensitivity, or there's something wrong. And if that's the case, we say, my friend, we're in need of a great physician because it's not supposed to hurt here. And yes, so often it does. But friends, if you surrender all of who you are and what you have to God, then you experience a unique type of grace that will become in you a conduit of grace to other people, God's favor. And the language that's used around this in this passage is really striking. It's language of partnership. Because even though we think about our finances individually, which we're all responsible for our individual finances, there is also an element of a collective for the church family. He uses these powerful words of partnership: grace, privilege, partnership, sharing, service, ministry, earnestness, love, willingness, generosity, abundance, a liberal gift, and an undertaking. These are things that we do together. And what is displayed in that is an invisible grace is made visible as we excel together in generosity. So that's the first example that Paul gives us with the example of the poor. The second example is the exact opposite. It is the example of the richest one. It's the example of Jesus. Look at verse 9. He says this: for you know that the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. If the first example is of the poorest of the poor, the second example is of the richest of the rich, Jesus himself. And of course, this verse is not just referring to a divine swap of material wealth, but it is also the reality that Jesus left the glories of heaven so that you might gain those same glories. He left the perfect place, deity in form, no imperfections around him, no pain, perfect physical fellowship with the Father. He left the riches of heaven for the poverty of earth, and he did so so that you and me might gain those very same riches of heaven through him. This is the sacrifice before the sacrifice. The incarnation of Jesus, his leaving heaven and coming to earth, was leaving much so that you can gain much. And it was the ultimate example of generosity. And so you see the poor giving much, and you see the rich giving much. And Paul is all driving those two contrasting but similar examples toward the reality of verses 13 through 15 of a shared ownership of Christians in spiritual and physical needs so that nobody is lacking. So with those two examples, Paul briefly addresses Titus, and then he gives the encouragement. And this is the encouragement for the Corinthians, and it's the encouragement for you as well. There's a conviction, two convictions behind this encouragement. We've mentioned them, right? Conviction number one, God is the majestic king. Conviction number two, we have an opportunity and even a responsibility to make something that is invisible visible. And that helps us to move from obligation to excelling in generosity. Check out verse 7. He says, as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. As you excel in everything. as you grow. And it's striking that he puts these things, these spiritual gifts that he mentions, all the things that you want to grow in as a Christian. You want to grow in faith because you love God. You want your speech to become more godly. You want your knowledge of him to be more precise and more robust. You want your earnestness and contention for the Lord to continue to expand as you grow in faithfulness. You want your love to continue to grow, and right parallel alongside all of those growth areas that you want to excel in, he parallels this particular act of grace as well, the grace of giving. When you become a Christian, you grow. That's what God does in you. Your faith strengthens and it forms your outlook on life. You begin to change who you act like and what you do. You see things more clearly. You have a unique view of an eternal reality. Your picture of the world around you is drastically expanded. You grow. And one of the great things about growing as a Christian, I love to hear all of your stories about the ways that God is growing you. All of those little points where it's not supposed to hurt there, but it does. But it doesn't hurt there anymore this year, even though it did last year. Or I've been really struggling and trying and contending to grow in this area. And finally, my effort was matched with God's grace and I'm continuing to grow. And my joy is growing and I'm zealous for the things of God. And it's great to hear new Christians who grow, who like totally, wow, my world was rocked. I didn't deserve God and he saved me. And now I'm headed a totally different direction. And it's great to hear people who are 83 years old continue to grow. They've been following Jesus for 60 years and yet they continue to grow from the moment of their conversion all the way to the moment that you die. As a Christian, you grow. And we ask the question, have you made it an intentional effort to grow in this way? Because here's the reality. Your growth is related to that surrender we talked about a moment ago. It's pretty easy to surrender some areas of your life. It's a little harder to surrender other areas of your life. And there are some areas of your life where you just want to hold on with a very tight grip. And for the vast majority of us, one of those areas is money. Notice, by way of observation, Paul isn't talking about tithing here. Tithing is an Old Testament law of giving 10% of the Jewish believer's income back to God as first fruits, the tithe. In the Jewish Old Testament, there was a number of other offerings and gifts, alms for the poor and a temple tax, that meant the average Jew would give 22 to 24% of their income back to God in some form or another. Paul isn't talking about law. He's talking about a weekly collection, a rhythm of Christian giving that's often referred to as sacrificial giving. He says that this is in proportion with what you have, verse 12. And the example of Jesus is disproportionate in the amount of grace that he gives compared to what we deserve. And so there's this charge to excel in this grace of giving, for you to excel in generosity. Generosity is when you forego something else in order to be generous, isn't it? And it's hard. It's hard to be generous. There's a lot of obstacles to generosity. The biggest ones are probably debt. Some of us say, I'd like to be generous, but I just have a lot of debt. And I can't be generous if I'm constantly serving this debt. Some of us say, I want to be generous, but you know what? It's going to really change my lifestyle. And I want a high lifestyle. That's why I work so hard. Or some of us have expectations for our future that prevent us from being generous now. Others of us say, you know, I'd like to be generous, but that means I probably can't take 3 vacations a year to really nice places. I don't know if I want to give that up. Some of us are saying, Pastor, I'm with you. Like, I'm excited about what God is doing. I see that I in no way, shape, or form deserve his grace in my life. I'm absolutely enamored with the fact that the eternal King of the universe wants anything to do with me. I want to excel in giving. I just don't really know how to get there because it's hard and my financial life is complicated. Let me remind you of what I call the arrow of progress. This is a little chart that we've used before, and you might find yourself somewhere on here. How do you grow in generosity? Well, it starts in the way left side of it. And that starts with what we would just call a decision. A decision to become generous. Most of us, left to our own devices, are not just going to naturally become generous because there's always something to spend on, right? And so you need to make a decision. I want to grow or excel in this grace, as Paul says. That then is met sometimes on the very left side of what we might call what we feel like is impossible. I have a tangled financial mess of debt or a lifestyle or expectations. My finances currently don't allow me to be generous. And after a time, and after you make your decision is actually met with some action and you start to unwind the rat's nest of your money a little bit, you then can start to practice some sort of generosity. Maybe for some of you, that's just like, I gave 1% of my income more than I did last year, and that's a step to the right. Sometimes it's 2% or 3%, or sometimes it's even more, but it's a consistent thing, but still there's a sense of obligation attached to it. You know what obligation is? Obligation is when your conviction for something drives you to action, but your heart really isn't in line with it. And so at that moment, typically if you're obliged to something you don't want to, you look for excuses not to obey. Well, I wanted to be generous, but, you know, I'm sure God will overlook it now because I have this, or he understands my situation, or he understands that. But, you know, there's something that happens after a while of that. When you're in obligation and your conviction still drives your action, and your heart is maybe just taking a while to catch up, but it does catch up. There's a switch that flips. And I've seen it hundreds and hundreds of times and hundreds of people. The switch that flips is you move from obligation to an excitedness because you're recalibrated. Your heart and your vision is recalibrated. And now, instead of looking for excuses not to obey, you start looking for reasons to be generous. God, you are the majestic King of the universe. Your generosity has been applied to me in incredible ways. I see you for who you are. I've seen again and again your overwhelming provision in my life, and now I'm excited to give, and I'm looking for opportunities to continue to grow in that way. And then that moves to the farthest right, which is what we would call excelling in giving. That's a rapid growth in generosity. That's begging, as the Macedonian Christians did, for the opportunity to participate in the work of God with their even minimal financial resources. I wonder where you are on the arrow. I wonder what you need to do to take just one step to the right. One step to grow in this grace. Friends, as we come down the home stretch, let's take a step back and draw out a few more implications of this generosity. The first one is that you need to know that giving is not a way of transferring your earthly treasures to heaven. That giving is a way of saying that my earthly treasures don't compare to the treasures of heaven. There's a big difference. There's a difference in just trying to gain more for yourself rather than recognizing that above everything, I treasure Christ, that I long to be with God in person. That no matter how much I have, they will never meet. Those material things will never meet my greatest desire and my greatest need. You could be the richest person in the world and be left empty on the inside because there is one that is worth treasuring above it all. Jesus Christ. And so when we give in generosity, we are saying that these things don't compare with that treasure. Secondly, we say that this is not simply a way of imitating Jesus, but rather it points to the life-changing grace that you receive through Jesus. You receive grace. God gives you more grace as you become a conduit of his grace. This grace is invisible to many people, but it's made visible through generosity. Thirdly, we say that giving is not fueled simply by obligation nor motivational strategies. It's fueled by joy and gratitude for what God has given. invisible grace is made visible. It's joyfully done so as we excel in generosity. Imagine yourself the richest woman in the world, owner of numerous estates, mansions, slaves, or servants on three continents. Then imagine giving up every penny of it for Christ's sake. Melania the Younger did just that. Melania was born in the year 383. She is the richest person in the world that you have never heard of. She was reared a Christian. She loathed the decadence of Rome, even as a child. And she wanted to follow an ascetic and celibate life, believing that that was her path to perfection. Her wealthy parents insisted, however, that she marry, and the man that they chose, Pananias, was a cousin on her father's side. He was also the heir to an immense wealth and a nominal Christian. And so when they got married shortly after Melania's 14th birthday, Pananias was just 3 years older. At the age of 17 and 14, they became one of the richest couples in the entire Roman Empire, with holdings in Italy, Sicily, Gallia, Spain, Britain, Carthage, Numidia, Mauritania, Mesopotamia, Syria, Palestine, and Egypt. And their holdings included thousands of slaves. After the marriage, Melania applied Christ's command to the rich young ruler to herself. And she wanted to give away all that she owned because she saw the decadence of their holdings as the biggest danger that she could possibly have in allegiance to this world. And she wanted her allegiance to be with Christ. And so they began selling their property, giving money to advance the work of the gospel, to show their true allegiance and helping people in need. Their holdings were so vast that the work of divesting of them took decades. In Italy alone, they freed 8,000 slaves. One of their mansions was so expensive they could find no buyer in the entire world for it. In the year 408, the still wealthy couple left Rome because of the advance of the Visigoths. They settled in Sicily. In 410, they moved to North Africa with Melania's mother, and they divested their African holdings. There, Melania met Augustine of Hippo and one of his colleagues and supported the gospel work there. They founded a nunnery and a monastery and gave freely wherever there was need. In 417, Melania and her mother and Pananias moved to Jerusalem by way of Egypt. In Alexandria, they met the church father Cyril, who was opponent to the bishop Nestorius, whose views on Christ were heretical. They later established residence in Jerusalem. She would go back and visit the desert fathers. In Jerusalem, Melania became acquainted with the famous Bible scholar Jerome and supported his work there. She founded a monastery for 90 virgins on Mount of Olives, and she refused to head the institution. But shortly after settling in Jerusalem, they distributed the last of their vast wealth. Finally, after decades, they now lived in poverty. They were dependent upon others. She secluded herself for prayer and fasting, and she viewed the remaining part of her life, the Mary years. First part, the Martha years, the years of service. The last part, the Mary years, the years of feasting on Christ's teaching and presence. She was concerned for her uncle, so she went to Constantinople, where she led him to Christ on his deathbed. She repudiated the views of this deposed Bishop Nestorius. She won followers back to Orthodoxy. And back in Jerusalem, she received a visit from the Empress Eudoxia in 438. It was the last significant event of her life. Melania the Younger died on December 31st, 439. What a picture of overwhelming, a welling up in generosity. She had all of the treasures of the world at her fingertips, and she treasured Christ even more. Friends, God doesn't call you to give away all that you have. He doesn't necessarily call you to live impoverished, being supported by others. But he does call you to surrender all that you have to him. He calls you to treasure Christ above all. And when you do, you excel in generosity. And when you do, you make something that is invisible visible. Invisible grace is made visible as we excel in generosity.
Thanks, Pastor Nick. Have you ever felt like your prayer life is maybe a bit lacking, as in you wish it had more passion or would result in you feeling closer to Jesus when you're finished? I know I have. And we here at Opening the Bible want to help you in areas like this. That's why we're offering a resource this month for your gift to Opening the Bible. It's a book called Prayer by Pastor Tim Keller. And this book would be yours with your gift this month to us. Would you consider doing so? Go right now to openingthebible.org. That's openingthebible.org. Give us your gift today and we'll send you Prayer by Tim Keller. Opening the Bible is a teaching ministry of and is sponsored by Old North Church of Canfield, Ohio.